I just the title is slightly longer. So what this is about, this is about a way how to get large field chaotic inflation in string theory that will give us models that generate measurable amounts of primordial gravitational waves. So this, I think this is interesting in light of the future of CMB observations for the search for B-modes. This was done in collaboration with Liam McAllister and Eva Silverstein, two papers that I will report here on. So let me just first start with a short kind of summary reminder. I mean, although most people here know that, of course, what inflation is, just to get back to the basics. So this is a period of quasi-exponential expansion of the very early universe. We somehow need that in order to solve the classic initial condition problems of the hot Big Bang, more like the flatness problem, the homogeneity and isotropy problems, and so on. So the easiest way how to get that in quantum field theory is that you have an early phase with a very high vacuum energy, which comes from a slowly rolling light scalar degree of freedom scalar field. So if you have such a scalar field, then in the cosmological situation in GR, its equation of motion is given by this piece here, which has, you know, there's a friction piece here. It acts like a friction piece in the middle term. And when you can ensure that you start the field in a situation where its second time derivative is much more than the first one, then you will have basically the motion dominated by the last pieces, and this is slow roll. At that moment, the kinetic energy of the field is subdominant to its potential energy, and then you will have vacuum energy domination, which will act like a cosmological constant and drive quasi-exponential expansion. The scale factor blows up exponentially in that situation. This condition here is equivalent to a condition on the scalar potential of the scalar field, which means that its weighted first derivative and its weighted second derivative must be much smaller than one, if the scalar field has a canonically normalized kinetic term, which is why they always assume here that because of a study non-canonical cases. So in that case, when these conditions are fulfilled, then the Hubble parameter is nearly constant, kinetic energy is far subdominant, and then you have this quasi-exponential residual exponent. So what the nice thing is that it does not only do that, but inflation generates metric perturbations, long wavelength fluctuations of the metric in its near residual state. And they are the seeds, the scalar mode of these perturbations, they are the seed of the density perturbations, which we need to see structure formations. So it gives us this, so to speak, as an add-on, which it was not originally asked for. And the point is that you can calculate the scalar power spectrum of this density, the power spectrum of the scalar mode of the density fluctuations. And this quantity is basically given by the Hubble parameter squared over the slow roll parameter epsilon. And when you calculate for typical models, when you just write down slowly rolling scalar fields, you find that it is a near scale invariant power spectrum. And that is exactly what, even going back to Harris and Zeller, which we need to see the correct structure formation. What it does in addition is it generates also tensor fluctuations of the metric, so primordial gravitational waves. And these are, as you see, not the slow roll parameters don't enter in their site. They are just controlled by the magnitude of the inflaton potential itself. So could we measure these ones, we would have a direct measurement of the scale where inflation happens. And the point is, as you will see later, that if these are sizable compared to the scalar mode, then the potential is so big that basically you are sitting close to the gut scale. So if you could measure them, you would have, through the measurements of the quantum microwave background, a direct window to the gut scale, which I think is very interesting, because colliders, unless they're extremely lucky, they cannot directly access gut scale. So here you have something like a big microscope that gives you access to length scales in the very early cosmos that you otherwise would nowhere to be able to see directly. So, but there is for this kind of more simple models of inflation where you have one scalar field with a canonical kinetic term, there is a bound from David Lyce, a relation that tells you how much, that links them the amount of gravitational, primordial gravitational waves relative to the power in the scalar density, density fluctuations, it links this amount to the amount that the field rolls during that part of inflation that we can see during the last 60 e-folds. The scale factor has to grow in order to solve the initial condition problems of our local patch of the universe. So there is a link here. And you see that basically the field has to move more than a Planck distance to measure something like, to produce something like a percent of power in gravitational waves compared to the scale. And this percent, this 0.01 number, is crucial because when you compare with data, we can see that at the moment we have something like bounds from the WMF 5-year data combined with baryon acoustic oscillations and supernova data, which was something like 0.2. And this is what this error ellipsis might become in the future in the next 5, 7, 10 years because of a lot of future experiments that are going up after WMF. Planck has just launched. It's on its way to the L2 Lagrangian point now. It will take up measurements 3 months from now, 4 months from now. There are a number of ground-based or balloon-based experiments that are going up, or I think Biceps is already measuring. They're already taking data, but they haven't released anything yet. When they are all combined in 5 years from now, they might give us a resolution in error, something like this. So much smaller than now. But you see that the size, the error for the fraction in gravitational wave power is something like 0.01. So we cannot really hope realistically to resolve much better. And this, because of this relation I showed you, corresponds to roughly a Planck distance the field has to move. So in order to hope to see any gravitational waves from inflation, we should hope that then nature realizes a model where the field moves more than a Planck distance. And the point is now that because of this relation, we have now to worry how to set up inflation. Because if the field moves a Planck distance, then any generic dimension 6 operator that you get in effect a field theory will basically give you corrections, variations of order of the inflaton potential energy itself if the field just moves one Planck distance that will destroy your flatness generically. So you have to control these higher dimension operators if you are hoping to control the field motion for more than a Planck distance. One idea, basically the first one that was put out that how you can do that goes back to André Linde in 1983, is basically that you, in effect, the field theory, you postulate that your inflaton field has an approximate shift symmetry, so that at zeroth order it only couples derivatively, and then that the breaking of the shift symmetry is done by the inflaton potential itself. If you do that, then it is this potential, this three-level inflaton potential, that is the symmetry breaking parameter for the shift symmetry breaking. So every correction that you get from loops or a higher dimension operator coming from loops will be controlled by the size of the potential and not the Planck scale or something like that directly. Therefore, then you can show that at large fields, large field values, these corrections die out. But only if you have the shift symmetry before and its breaking is done by the inflaton potential itself. If you don't, if you cannot arrange for the situation, you have no control. So, if we want to do this now, basically in string theory, then the point is that because of this situation, we need a theory that tells us where we get the shift symmetry from. We cannot just postulate. I mean, in effect, a field theory can just postulate it. But it would be better if we have a UV-complete theory that allows us how to construct the situation where the shift symmetry holds and is respected under all perturbations and all corrections that you might expect in a theory of quantum gravity to arise. String theory is one such candidate theory. So it would be nice if you could construct models in string theory where you get these ideas realized explicitly, where you can find explicitly your shift symmetry, you find explicitly that it's broken by the inflaton potential itself, and therefore you get these kind of protected properties that allow you the large field motion. The point is that before you even start in string theory, to do that is you have first to solve the problem that in compactification of string theory to 4 dimensions, you have many moduli fields, scalar fields in 4 dimensions arising. They are all generically first light. If you if you just compactly find it, that's in a Calabi-Yau space. And since you only want one light scalar degree of freedom, the inflaton, and not the others, they will destroy inflation generically, you will have to stabilize all these modular fields. That has made a lot of progress in recent years, especially in the type 2 string theories, where people have learned to use the higher p-form fluxes that you have in the effective action for string theory, and D-brain's non-perturbative effects like Gino condensation, combinations of this, to stabilize essentially all of the moduli at quite high mass scales. So you are now, if you do that, you are in a situation that you have removed your moduli from your low energy spectrum. Now you have to find one remaining scalar degree of freedom that has all the necessary properties. So historically, the first models, because they are in a sense, I mean, you can construct them in using local properties of the scalar potential, basically fine-tuning, are brain inflation models or models that use local saddle points in the moduli potential for the closed string, the geometric moduli or the axionic components. So you can either have a pair of brains; they are attracted to each other by forces that. Behave from the p-form fields that behave like electric forces in the internal space. If they are in a warp throat, the warping can basically make the potential very flat. Still, you can then calculate, because this is a string setting, the dimension 6 operators, and can, by fine-tuning, arrange for local saddle points and or inflection points where you can, in the vicinity of that point, drive inflation. The same is here with the moduli potential for some Kähler modulus, some Bohrian modulus, whose axionic direction gets a saddle point, which is very flat, because you arrange the discrete parameters controlling the superpotential of that compactification finely enough that this becomes flat. The point is, because these are all the saddle points or inflection points, the field does inflation only while it stays very close to the top. Once it goes away from the top, it starts rolling fast, inflation ends. So in these models, you never get that the field moves more than a Planck distance, which is why all of these models don't produce a sizable amount of gravitational waves. They are indexed as something like 10 to the minus 4 or smaller. And the problem that is, I mean, what manifests itself here is a more general problem that Sergei already told us about, is that these inflatons typically are angular moduli or axionic moduli. These are the best candidates because they typically have more shallow potentials because, at least in type 2B construction, they don't couple directly to fluxes and get stabilized by non-perturbative effects. But the point is that they are periodic. They just see the compactness of the space, so they cannot. They don't have an unlimited field range. They just go. If you convert that into Planck units, they just go at most a Planck distance. Then they basically hit the fact that they turn back on themselves as a compactness. And that is your problem, why it is so difficult to find a field that does move more than a Planck distance. So even before you worry about protecting a field from corrections by a shift symmetry, you first have to find a field that just kinematically can move that distance. And the idea that we developed and that I would like to point out is that there are effects in string theory. In the most direct way, I think it's visible when you connect them, when you look at D-brains, that undo this periodicity. So the point is that if you find an object like a D-brain that does not see the periodicity of the field variable to which it couples, but whose tension, and therefore energy and potential energy, grows without end with increasing field value. So mathematically speaking, that this D-brain has a so-called monodropy in its potential energy with respect to the field on which the potential energy, the tension of the brain depends on, then you break the periodicity, and then basically this object sees the whole amount of field space you have been walking in. Basically, it sees all the number of times you walk around your basic fundamental domain, which was periodic. So in a sense, this is like, if you want, that you have your originally periodic direction, but you deform it into a stairway. When you look from above, the projection is still a circle, but the stairway really sees all the distance, how far you walk, how often you walk around. That just doesn't count mod the number of orbits you did. And so far we have two models that realize this idea. One is a situation in type 2A string theory, where we compactify the type 2A string theory not on a torus or a Calabi-Yau, but on a twisted torus, which is a product of two three-dimensional nil manifolds, and we'll shortly explain what that is and why that does the job we want. If we wrap a four-brain on a one cycle, so something like a one in S1, a circle of that manifold, specific circle, then if the brain moves along another circle, it will undergo a monodromy and will have its tension will grow with the distance it moves along that circle without end.
How do you wind this up? Like if you have the pictures of this one about five times yesterday, with the tunneling and then the long flat stretch where you have all the inflation at the minimum. You can see how the tunneling, drops you off somewhere at the beginning of the slow roll inflation and then you do your slow roll inflation. Now you want to be honest and actually get it from somewhere. But what's hard for me to see just intuitively is how you can have some event that drops you off with this thing wound up so many times around the circle. Would it be much more natural to be like within the first 2π?
Well, I mean, in that picture with this moving forebrain where it's really a position field, I admit I have at the moment, I have no good mechanical picture how to really pull this thing 100 times along that circle to wind it up, so to speak, or how to drop it there. What you probably need is you need to see whether there are other metastable vacuum and close by, which are separated by some barrier, where that position field is already in a VEF, where it's excited when you tunnel from there, you drop at a VEF for that position field, which corresponds to that the brain is wound up, so that this VEF is not zero. It's easier to see in the other model where I will come to following on, where it's a five-brain wrapping a two-cycle in type 2B, because there it's an axion, like the axion that Sergei was using, that is the inflaton, and there you know that the axions have potential just from instantons, so maybe you find another regime, another part of the scalar potential where tunneling from there, the axion starts with an initial VEF and is wound up. But for the, I have no good idea how to, from a tire to describe how to jump there. This is something that is, we are thinking about it, but at the moment we have not a clear picture for that. It would be very good to know about it, because if you want to have this picture and you want to study like a population of these kind of modes of, this method of doing inflation, what did it do? It killed the whole thing. Well, anyway. There it is, sorry. If you have your normal picture of small field inflation where some modulus locally tunnels is a minimum, then you can, by whatever, Coleman-Dulicha tunneling or something, you can have a picture of how these things get populated, and you can try to estimate how your number density or number frequency of vacuum gets, the distribution gets reshaped by inflationary dynamics. You would like to know how this works here, and for that you would need that, the answer to that question, in order to compare. At the moment, I don't know. The only thing I would probably know is that comparing, for instance, to a small field inflation where you have to land more or less very close to the saddle point when you come from the tunneling process. Otherwise, you overshoot. You never go into the inflationary phase, right?
And then friends show that this doesn't happen.
Initially.
It's not just initially. It's there. It's initially.
Yeah. That could, of course, that would be one possibility. If it is very hot, that's true, then, of course, these brains would just move around and just would wiggle and juggle around in the manifold, and somewhere they would just, by chance, would just get stuck up, just shake around several times, and then they would begin to roll down. That is one possibility. The other, the other thing you could, of course, assume, that's very probably, you could assume that if the brain sits at the minimum, because this is a large field potential, you could think of make the quantum jump. up the potential. Extremely unlikely, but once it is there, it will then start inflating.
Yeah, but depending on how exponentially suppressed that is, you end up, not just canceling the benefit you got from the exponentially suppressed.
Yeah, I know. The point is that I should be honest here. These models do not look like that. They give me so much field space that I could do eternal inflation. Because for that, I would need on power law potential, I typically need more than 1,000 Planck units displacement, and I will not get that much. So let me just sort of describe how a nil manifold looks like, because that's a space that typically people don't think about when they compactify string theory. So what this is, it looks like nearly like a torus, but it is twisted. There's a piece here in the metric, and you see that mix two different directions. In such a way that instead of being just a 3-torus, this is a vibration of a 2-torus fiber over an S1 base. And the point is that you can see this graphically here. Imagine that I started define a zero position on this base circle, the U1 direction. This is the one that doesn't participate in the mixing here. And then in the torus fiber, I just pick the direction U2, that is a one cycle, and wrap the 4-brain on that one cycle. So it wraps that one cycle and it fills our 4 large spacetime dimensions. Now I move the brain along the base circle direction, the U1. What happens is that the fiber begins to deform its complex structure. It tilts over. The area, the volume of this torus stays the same, but this angle tilts over, and therefore this one cycle gets longer and longer. It gets longer without end. The more often you go around, the longer the thing becomes. And when it becomes longer, the brain stretches. It has a tension, therefore the energy stored in the tension grows proportionally, as a function of the length of that cycle. And therefore you get a potential energy density as a function of the U1 field that grows without end. It sees the full U1 range and not just its periodically modded out fundamental domain. So you have a situation that this 4-brain sees a monodromy in its potential energy as a function of the U1 position value. And that is therefore this is how it would look like if you map this whole picture back always on the fundamental domain, the original torus, so to speak. The original torus. Then you see that the brain stretches, and eventually becomes multiply wrapped on the torus fiber. This also tells you that you should not do this arbitrarily often, because if they become very many times wrapped and very close to each other, there will at some point be open strings stretching between these neighboring wrappings, windings of the brain, and then you will get, of course, there you get an instability, some decay.
So what controls how much you can, how long you
can? Basically, you should make sure that these directions are sufficiently larger than the string scale, so that you need 10 times going around the base circle means you have 10 wrappings roughly. Then if you have this thing is longer than 10 times the string length, then you get to the string length separating between neighboring windings, and then it becomes, tunneling becomes no longer that exponentially suppressed. So there's a bound to this thing, in that. That is what I already said. That is, the brain experiences a monodromy because its tension energy grows without it, just kinematically, and I move more and more along this space.
Then
when it comes really close to itself, it can break and then basically tunnel to another state by reconnecting where it is just spontaneously, unwraps completely for instance. It could.
So why wouldn't you need enough space in the future?
Yeah, exactly. So for instance, you would
think that, let's say if you had this, project back to the fundamental, the original torus fiber, and let's say this is like 10 times the string length. If I have like 5 wrappings, then this distance will be 2 times LF and you will already get suppression of time. It is bounded because it sits on this tilted cycle. And that tilted cycle is different in homology, therefore you cannot just directly reconnect. The only thing you could tunnel if I wrap up 20 times here, right? Then the distance becomes substring scale, and then it becomes energetically very easy. To tunnel and then go to a new situation where whatever you have, whatever one here, a lot of them.
You mean strings stretch between the different I mean, it is in a sense still the same bracket. It is stretching between different wines of the same brand. So it's not like two different grains that are. I mean, it would change, of course, when these things get close, right? And that would entail that we would see probably additional light molds or something like that. So
why is the question whether they're closer than one string length? I mean, all you need to do is have some kind of fluctuation, which doesn't take extremely energies, to just deform one of those lines into the next one.
Yeah, but
No,
I mean, as I said, this tunneling is always there. The other thing, the kind of like classical fluctuation that you are talking about, the point is that this thing sits in the covering space on a cycle that is not in the same topologically, not the same cycle. It's just two of these.
The point is, if these adjacent strings run into each other, they can break and reconnect. Right? So I think I'm allowed to ask whether the small fluctuations in the background about what's the characteristic size of the fluctuations of those adjacent loops of string, which are wound on each.
No, but this is not a string. This is a four brain.
Whatever it is.
I mean, I was just. You mean that when it wiggles in this orthogonal, so to speak, that it.
It's kind of screw, right? And you have a string that goes. And the question is, why can we go?
The fact that the stretching mode is a massive mode, right?
Yeah.
Whereas translating this thing is a massless mode, right? So, in other words, so long wavelength limitations of the string are energetically easier than actually stretching the string.
Yeah, but that is.
So the kind of question is maybe, you know, if this potential is shallow along the stretching string direction,
mm-hmm.
which you want for your input time,
yeah.
it's somehow even more shallow in other directions, of course, by the original string. So you have another way of saying it is maybe you really have a full potential there in front of you.
Yeah,
other directions
yeah.
you can move.
Yes. What I know is, I mean, is the situation, as I said, when you go to the covering space, which the brain really sees, then it sits on this cycle, which is in a different homology class than the cycles it would go to, even if it reconnects. Since this would be a transition between two topologically different cycle classes, there is an energy cost involved when you go across that.
I think I asked my question probably the wrong way. Probably the question is just when it sits on this cycle, what is the mass of the small transverse excitation? That's probably the
mass of the orthogonal moment.
Yeah, I think that's the question. Yeah.
Yeah.
How does it compare? So do you have extra mass in space?
So the mass of this. Yeah, I know that. Then in principle, if they would be light, then yeah, I know. Yeah. They are parallel to itself. Is it? This is, yeah, if you. Yeah, I mean. It's the brain, yeah, that is true. It's not, I mean, they go always through the same orientation. It can reconnect, so to speak. No, I mean, no, it cannot, because it's not the brain anti-brain situation. You have always the same the same orientation. So that is true. I wouldn't have thought. I would describe it as a brain. As I said, it can tunnel to another configuration where you have one brain wrapping that and whatever n minus one brains for in total n wrappings before wrapping this other cycle. That you can have, right? Because when it wraps n times, it carries some charge, so to speak, in the end. And this would be good. I mean, in the end, would be
like that.
That there you could tunnel to, but this is not breaking in a sense.
That's
what I meant. Yeah, you can tunnel to the configuration.
So you reconnect.
Yeah.
I mean, in that sense. Charge is still the same.
Yeah, but this is not the reconnection in the sense that they really touch. Right?
I mean, what I'm asking, is this the final product of what you're worried about?
Yeah, that could happen. This kind of situation that you have to say, these are n wrappings, you have one here and one above there. That would happen. But this thing comes as an energetic cost, because you cannot continuously jump from that side to the other.
But
the energy at the end is
lower,
right?
Hmm?
At the end, the energy is lower.
At the
in this configuration.
That is lower, of course. That energy is
lower. You're just saying you have to get over it.
Yeah, you have to go over the barrier. That's why I said, if this distance here, the
I think what we're debating is how high that barrier
is. Yeah, the question
is
not the distance, but how high is the barrier? Yeah, why is the distance relevant?
Why
does it matter if the street is the distance? Why does it matter if the distance is the distance? The reason I ask this, I mean, you can take this diagonal configuration.
Yes.
You even know that it's stable. So I mean, you know, there are forces between these brains, right? They're not necessarily simple. So
you mean between these edges and what
one
is?
I mean, if they were right next to each other, right?
Yeah.
They would repel each other, right?
Yeah.
If they're now in some weird configuration, you've got some complicated space. Do you even know that this configuration is just stable?
They are even the distance along the torus, so you can just move this thing in the neighboring fundamental domain, you shift it around.
So what's possible? For sure? Is that true? Or is that,
I mean, if I can translate it and it looks the same, then I would say under perturbating these things, it cannot really go away. Because if you move in the one direction, I mean, you will be repelled back, so that will be basically from this neighboring current force in the neighborhood.
So it means that
the
I think it's clear that it's stable, because just draw it on the skewed torus. It's just something that stretches from there to there. I think it's clear that that's stable configuration.
I think the question is what the energy is
classical motion
to do this deformation here, right? To start like this and then start deforming it like that. Now they're really close, and I've made them closer than the string scale, so who cares about the string scale? The question is how hard is it to make this deformation so that I can reconnect them?
Yes, but okay. But I mean, the scale that controls the fluctuations of the brain is basically one of the alpha prime which you have there. So I think it should be at the end. The mode should be basically be a string scaling mass, right? So
it just seems intuitively that in this situation where one direction is very long, that there should be a.
But then the point is, I mean, if it is stretched very long, then this motion that you are worried about is really in that direction. It will be controlled by that side, which is the smaller one. We want this to be in mind like 10, but not like that positive. This one will be always related to
that. Yeah,
but that is empathically long. You know, it's stretched very long because we need power to this direction. That fluctuation is parallel to the brain. That doesn't bring these things close to each other. The ones that brings them closer to each other is this one. That would be controlled then at least by the KK scale, which is not that much smaller than the string scale.
So it's in this direction, one tensor. It's one tensor string scale.
The the Maya Hegesia, because that will be a relatively small size. We don't want this thing to be really big. The volume of this torus is big, but this thing is much longer than this. It is an isotropic. We need this also for effect, otherwise we need the energy density for the infraton will be already big from the very beginning. For moduli stabilization to not get screwed up. So in that sense, I mean, if you really stretch longer and longer, you get more and more parallel to the long direction. That means that the orthogonal fluctuation is controlled by that distance, the smaller one. If that is something like a tenth of the string scale in mass, then that is basically the mass you have to walk up in that direction. I would have thought these are the ones that go along, you know, fluctuations along the break.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not fluctuations orthogonal.
Yeah, no.
I was just thinking if you talk about deforming this thing like Raphael drew there, then this is it goes. I mean, you have to deform the string orthogonally to its original direction. Yeah, but I mean, but this will in general. I mean, if the, this will cost energy if you try to deform it that way. We haven't explicitly, we haven't explicitly computed the spectrum of those brain fluctuations, the orthogonal ones, so to speak, that go. We have done these geometric estimates from the point that this thing is anisotropic, but we haven't really done the fluctuate these orthogonal small fluctuations directly. That is probably something that is worthwhile to do and just check explicitly. That what I just said from the geometry that this is true. Smaller, at least, I mean, of that KK, that smaller KK, that higher KK scale corresponding to that small cycle, and therefore us.
If I may interject a little bit in the light of time, this is obviously an interesting discussion, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be resolved in this part. So put a check mark,
yeah,
and we can continue that later on. So we, continue to
mm-hmm. No,
so
check
that
especially is a good point that we haven't done that at that time. So I just show you here how this stretching effect that gives you this increasing, ever increasing potential energy works, and directly when you write down the effective action for the full brain, the DBI part of the action, and you reduce it on that tilt, ever longer becoming tilting cycle, you find that the length of the cycle is just this diagonal thing, which you see here, point is that, of course, that this field you want the position field along for the position along the base cycle of this new manifold along which the forebrain moves has a kinetic term, of course, also coming from the brain. And this cycle length, where it is wrapped on, multiplies both the potential energy part on the brain and the kinetic term. So the kinetic term is not canonically normalized for the one field. Therefore, you have to go to a canonically normalized scalar, redefine your field, and there are two regimes that you can easily see. One is when the U1 field is close to the origin, close to zero, then you just have constant plus quadratic here, and the constant multiplies also the kinetic term. So in that case, you get a quadratic potential close to the origin, as you should. There should be this, hopefully, a mass term. But then at large distances, when U1 becomes big, then you can expand this square root, and it begins with the linear piece coming from here, plus corrections, and then you have a linear length like U1 times U1 dot squared, and then you get a non-canonically normalized kinetic term, you redefine, and what that leads you is that, as I said, it is quadratic close to the origin, but far away it becomes power 2/3. In the terms of the canonically normalized field, the potential energy grows like 5^2. So this is something which you probably wouldn't expect getting from field theory that easy, because such a shape, if you continue to the origin, is non-analytic. So here there is really a distinction. I mean, this is a model that you probably wouldn't think of in effect field theory directly. And for this shape, you see that you have to start the field at about 9 Planck distances, up the potential to have it rolling for 60 e-folds and slow roll, driving your minimum inflationary phase that you need. The point is now that, of course, when you embed this in a full setting, you will turn on a lot of fluxes on this compactification that is a product of two of these Neel manifolds, these three-dimensional Neel manifolds. Fluxes and certain Simons invariants, Wilson lines, in order to fix all the moduli. There's a paper by Ivo Silverstein at the end of 2007 that has analyzed this before we did this. And that gives you a moduli potential that here is generically depends in power law functions on all of the different moduli of the manifold. And you have to make sure that the energy density coming from inflation, from the motion of this brain, does not, because it will also have some power law dependence on the volume moduli, for instance, of the manifold, does not overrule the moduli potential coming from the fluxes. Otherwise, you will go into runaway, into modulus direction, and you will lose control. So that means that from that condition, there is a bound on how far you can go up the potential. And in order to get your 9 or 10 Planck units, as I said, you already need that this torus is anisotropic. You will have to basically make sure that this direction here, on which initially the brain wraps, is not just roughly 10 string lengths, but this one will be. So there is a tuning involved. There's a tuning involved in this ratio of the lengths, which effectively in the end amounts to the tuning length of 1% tuning in order to make the inflation to work for this range of 10 Planck units, which I think is not too bad. And once you took into account all these constraints, you checked the back reaction of the forebrain on the geometry that all this works, then you can analyze in the end what inflationary predictions this potential gives you. And what you find for such a shape, 5^2 is that it has a spectral index that is closer to 1 than, let's say, many of the small field models, 0.98, but it produces a sizable R. 0.04 is something that these future probes should probably be able to see quite decisively at some point. And this combination, when you plot that, which I will show later, is something. I mean, it's different from m squared, phi squared, lambda phi to the fourth, from the field theory large field models. It just sits in a different point, such that you can discriminate. So the second example that we studied is a type 2b. String theory, and that is to be set on a warped Calabi-Yau flux compactification along the lines of KKLT, because that at least gives us some kind of handle on low energy supersymmetry, at least for the pure Calabi-Yau itself. So what the point is, what we do here is we don't use we're guided initially by saying that the forebrain and type 2a, when you do a t-duality to type 2b, becomes a 5-brain, and what was the twist? This vibration in the new manifold is like a metric flux which becomes H-flux on the other side of the duality. So you think of having basically now a 5-brain with the two-form Noether-Schwarz field that plays the role of what was before the brain position. That was the initial guidance. And since the D5-brain really sees the Noether-Schwarz two-form potential, you see that when you reduce that on a two-cycle which the 5-brain wraps, it again gets under the square root of the potential that grows without end with increasing axion depth. It doesn't see that this axion is periodic. I will come to that. I mean, in order to make 10 Tetrahedral cancellation, basically you have to construct a manifold where you have a family of two cycles which reach down at, say, in two different throats. You put a 5-brain on one end and an anti-5-brain on the other end, and then basically excite the Bs in opposite direction so that the total B is always, I mean, the tetrahedral is globally cancelled.
Yeah, but that anti-brain also can be...
Yeah, yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, yeah. I mean, that is for basically the double the energy, because it's exactly, I mean, they just add up. So, the point is that this thing still is here. Is this thing, I mean, this is the easiest and the naivest way that, to get this monodromy to work, but it is not a good infratime. Because if you go in this KKLT-like scenario of moduli stabilization, where you turn on fluxes, you generate a flux-generated superpotential, then also, let's say, Eason pounds and Gaugino condensates that you use the fixed scalar moduli. The problem is that the F-term potential, because this is a supergravity formulation, and the moduli stabilizing scalar potential can be described in terms of the supergravity F-term scalar potential that always has this piece e to the scalar potential in front. And the Kähler potential depends explicitly on the B2 field when it is non-zero. This is just there. There are these and when you expand that out, I mean, like, it appears like B squared in the Kähler potential. Now, expand E to the B squared, and this moduli potential has some size of gut scale, typically, and that we have for our purpose here. Then you will get corrections, mass terms for the inflaton, corrections to the mass, which are of the order of the inflaton potential itself. Therefore, it will give you a net-up problem because the theory does not respect, I mean, does not have a shift symmetry for this B field. So here we see the situation that we have the monodromy, we have the large field range, but without the protection by a shift symmetry, we are lost. We cannot control what this field does on a single Punkin field distance. What we can do, fortunately, is we can use S-duality and dualize the DBI part of the D5 brain action to the Hauen NS5 brain depends on the S-dual 2-form field, which is C2, the Ramond-Ramond sector field, which is also there. The dependence by S-duality and by the fact that locally these are in the supersymmetry and the compactification is at least n equals 2, and therefore they are these are BVS states, so they are linked by supersymmetry, they are protected, and they have to have the same dependence on their in charge and mass. Therefore, we know that the dependence on the C2 field for the NS5 brain grows in the same way. It has the same monodromy property. But the fact is that the C2 axion does not appear in the Kähler potential at any perturbative level. It has a perfect perturbative shift symmetry, which is only broken by instanton effects. And therefore, in this situation, we have realized what we want. We have the large field distance, the potential energy that grows monotonically with ever-increasing field field value, field BEV, and we have the protection by the shift.
In one language, you see the problem, then you dualize the problem is not. What really happened?
No, I mean, I don't think so, because these brains don't couple to the same form fields. Right?
Well, I mean, things can be perturbative on one side but not perturbative on the other side. So maybe, you know, in the regime where this NS5 brain is the right description, maybe there is an initial symmetry to the symptoms. But I think if there is a symptom, the other side might be perturbative. So I don't think it's not a perturbative.
The other thing is, of course, that the perfect symmetry between two sides you expect before you orient a fold. This fact that the B axion appears at the Kähler potential comes thanks to the oriented folding, the O7 oriented folding, that forces you to write down chiral multiplets that have this funny split. If you are in the N equals 2 situation before oriented folding, then I think there is no dependence also on B in the Kähler potential directly, and then you would have shift symmetries in both sectors, of course.
So isn't Susie badly broken?
It is broken globally, yeah, because the 5 brain is not supersymmetric with respect to a D3, D7, O7 background. But locally, the manifold, I mean, imagine I have, in the end, I will put this thing in a warped throat. If I view the local geometry, like a local deformed conifold, this has originally even n equals, at least n equals 2, even probably even n equals 4 supersymmetry. So locally, it is supersymmetric. It's only globally, and by embedding in the global Calabi-Yau oriented fold, that the supersymmetry is broken. Therefore, the effect that I get will be controlled by the large volume scale in the end, right? And they are suppressed in the depth. So So this is how, as I said, how you would probably set up such a model. You try to find a situation where the oriented fault has two warp floats that share a family of two cycles. And you go to the kind of minimum two cycle down in the throats. The NS5 brain globally has, when it backs user, it has energy density. It is a quite strong effect. It is a 1 over GS squared, G string squared effect. So you have to warp it down, otherwise you have no control at all. And it will go down here because of the redshift of the warp factor. It will try to go down here. And then when you put a 5 and an anti-NS5 brain here, and you do this switching on of the C2, then your tap-off cancellation is ensured, and you can turn on this feature. So as I said, this here, locally you can view this way. For instance, you just take the plane, you mod it by C2, and this plane locally is basically, this is just a modding of a conic fold geometry, and then you get a line of fixed points, a fixed line, and this fixed line you blow up, and then you get this family of two cycles. This is one way how you could get that local. So, as I said, the shift symmetry is preserved in the pre-level and perturbatively corrected Kähler potential. The contributions that are potentially dangerous are instantons, instanton effects in the C-level approach. They will, if this instanton is from a brain, for instance, wrapping, let's say, the fourth cycle, which is associated with the two cycle in which the five brain sits, it will generically give contributions, and they can depend on this. Also, I mean, they give oscillating dependence cosines, cosine functions of this C2 axiom. So one way to avoid that is you just put in by hand, you just choose to never use Euclidean D3 brains for moduli stabilization, but you stabilize everything just with wrapping, putting stacks of seven brains on the four cycles to stabilize the Kähler module. Then the non-perturbative effects coming from Gaugino condensation. Gaugino condensation is the gauge theory is controlled by that condensation is controlled by holomorphy and supersymmetry that basically constrains the gauge kinetic function so strongly that you can show that the dangerous one instanton effects that you might worry about are not there. The first thing you can get is a two instanton effect, which is already suppressed enough that you can easily make it so small that it doesn't. Correct your potential from the NS5 brain, sizably. You have to check again about back reaction. The point is that you want that when you turn on the C2 on the NS5 brain, it will carry three brain charge. The three brain charge will try to make its own throat. You should make sure that the geometry doesn't get deformed too strongly. This basically gives you a bound on how often you can, I mean, how much axion web you can turn on, how often you can go around the axion direction. And that basically, there it helps if the space, the Calabi-Yau space, is as big as possible. Basically, that grows with the volume. And when you try the enter, there are situations where you can satisfy all these consistency conditions. One is a toy model, which we have written down, that is inspired by F-theory constructions in type 2B, like in Dennett, Douglas, Floria, of models that have two Kähler moduli, one big and one small one, basically. And when you are taking inspiration from there, you might hope that there are Calabi-Yaus that have a Kähler potential of form like this. There's one big modulus, and then there are blow-up modes here. You see this axionic field appearing here, that is basically B2 plus C2, plus IC2. So the imaginary part, the C2, doesn't appear. Shift symmetry here is manifest. And then you stabilize, as I said, just by putting seven brains on the two corresponding to the two Kähler moduli. And then by choosing numbers which are not particularly fine-tuned. I mean, these are numbers corresponding to gauge loops which are very similar to the ones that you got in existing F-theory constructions. And the superpotential of the size 10 to the minus 2, to have the whole potential at the gut scale, roughly the barrier height. Then you find that your moduli all get stabilized and your NS5 brain generates a linear potential for that C2 axion. Linear, because the kinetic terms for these axion fields come from the bulk action, from the 10D supergravity action, and are not, therefore they stay canonical, basically. They don't get multiplied by field dependence. And And this thing is that you can, for these theoretical parameters, for instance, subdominant to the potential, to the moduli and potential energy. So you have a stable situation where you can really move up 10, 12 Planck distances in order to get this thing to work. So, and when you calculate the predictions coming from the linear potential that you get in this case, see, then what you find is that you basically produce, you get a little bit more red spectral index and you get more gravitational waves. The R index here is about 0.07 instead of 0.04. When you compare that with the data that we have at the moment from WMF, you see that this is pretty well consistent so far. And comparing with what the future data might show, we see that you can very easily, I mean, these are like the m squared phi squared models in effective field theory or lambda phi to the fourth. It's very easy, given that we reach that precision, if we find anything, to discriminate between these models. And it's not so easy to get these things in just simple monomial field theory models. You wouldn't write something down that's less than m squared phi squared in power. But it becomes the non-analytic at the origin. And so that's what we hope for, that when they see something, and that then these predictions that we get for these two cases, which are not easily tunable. It's not like in small field by inflation, by adjusting the saddle point, you can really get any spectral index, only R is always basically zero. But here you have a whole function predicted for the potential. You cannot easily fine-tune these numbers away. So you can either find them or don't see them.
I don't understand how we can think of this as a prediction for R. I mean, I think it's very interesting what you're doing.
Yes.
I think it's great that you wouldn't be doing anything better. Okay, but I don't understand how you can be predicting R. There's no room in this manifold for putting the standard model in. There's no room for wrapping fluxes to, you know, to solve the cosmological constant problem. I mean, this is just not a compactification which has all of the ingredients that we need for the real world.
Well,
I'm not sure. And once you put those in, yeah, it's going to change the volume of the compactification, which is going to change the formation of M Planck. So I'm not sure how we can have any idea what R is going to come out of some construction which looks sort of like this.
Well, for the four-brain construction, I agree that I do not know really whether that is, in that sense, really realistic, because the new manifold is too simple to just put anything. For the other case here, I mean, this kind of toy model, on the Calabiau toy model that I showed, is inspired. I mean, you get such a structure very similar from, let's say, the 11169 Calabiau that Denham, Douglas, and Floyer have used. That thing has 272 complex structure moduli, which is pretty much enough to fine-tune your cosmological constant, I guess, if you turn on all these free-form fluxes.
And the volume you end up with and the formula you apply is going to depend on the details.
Of course. But the point is, I mean, once you fix the size of your flux superpotential, the overall size, and then adjust the warp factor such that the lifting coming from the residual lift from the 5-brain and maybe also an anti-3-brain if you need that, that it cancels the cosmological constant in the minimum after inflation, then you just have to adjust digits in the size of W naught in order to fine-tune the cosmological constant, right? And once the overall size is you have chosen, then the volume, I mean, it basically stays where it is, given by the non-perturbative effects. I mean, a given F-theory construction will give you certain gauge groups, and they will lead to certain waves as a function of W naught for the Kähler moduli.
How do you imagine preheating your implementation?
I mean, if nothing else works in these models, it is that the inflaton will always couple gravitationally. And since it is a high-scale model, you will get some 10 to the 6 GeV or something like that, the reheating temperature. There are all papers on how you can reheat just gravitationally. There might be better ways if you somehow place the standard model close to it in the same throat or something like that. And I think people have studied in, for instance, in this in that manifold I was mentioning, this is a vibration over P2, I guess. You can write it like this. And if you blow up in this P2 like 8 or 9 points, you get something like a DP9 or DP8. And for that, they have written down these F-theory guts in compact models, Timo Weigand and collaborators. So there are ways how to get even real, I mean, models of particle physics in these kind of constructions.
Coming back to Peter, what do you expect that most of stuff to be just excitation despite it? You have this axiom.
Yeah.
So if we talk about the gravitation, then we expect just that between this guy. So
initially, yeah, but
yeah,
yeah, initially, of course, it will oscillate in this axion field, but then over time it will go via gravitation coupling into other fields, right? It's just not as efficient. The
so
heat temperature will be low.
Can I suppress this axion?
Yeah.
And let it decays.
Yeah, yeah. You produce everything, and there have been studies in the 80s where you just use that, and when the inflation scale is high enough, basically bigger than 10 to the 12 GeV or so.
The problem is not that you read efficiently, the problem is what you're going to produce. And if you decay gravitationally, you're going to produce everything. We know that reheating needed to produce 90% of more diesel. So your trouble here is that democratic reheating is not going to be.
Yeah, but the point is, because the reheating temperature will be quite low for a gravitationally driven reheating, it's like 10 to the 6 GeV or something like that, typically for such models. And these models have very high supersymmetry breaking scale, 10 to the 15 GeV. You don't reheat all these, you don't reheat into the supersymmetric partners like or gravitinos. I mean, you don't have to worry about that.
So what is the mass
scale? The axion mass scale, I mean, after inflation, in the inflationary minimum, it is high, it's roughly at that scale.
Yeah, then why don't you produce at that scale?
I mean, it is a bit lower, of course. It is there. It is. It is not parametrically suppressed, but it is not as heavy as the other moduli, for instance. It's just not really light.
You're assuming that there is basically nothing bad that's lighter than it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, the lightest thing is this axion, so to speak. And
except the standard one, and whatever the dark matter is.
Yeah, okay, the dark matter, yeah. But, I mean, especially all the supersymmetric partners are very heavy. It is in these constructions when you choose a KKLT-like stabilization mechanism, because there the barrier heights are tied to the depth and to the strength of uplifting and suitable. Yeah, but the point is, in order to have my inflation process generates by itself during inflation a positive contribution to the vacuum energy, which is a function of the volume moduli, of course, of order of gut scale.
Yeah, but after
wait, no, yeah, I know, but the point is, in order to have that stably happening, I need that. The barriers of the moduli potential protecting the moduli in their stable positions have to be gut scale. Now, in KKLT-like stabilization, and the simplest ones at least, that barrier of gut scale height means that the ADS vacuum, the supersymmetric, before uplifting, before adding any anti-brains or NS5 brains, has been minus gut scale.
Okay, so what cancels that after inflation? So after inflation, this you should see is gone. But you want to zero.
Yeah, you put an anti-3 brain. An anti-D3 brain.
What do you mean?
I mean, you can have that, but you can just put that by hand in one of these warp throats, right? And then by choosing the warp factor in the right way.
So I say that you started with ADS, which was very low.
Yeah.
And then you uplifted it by this thing, and then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then you have to make sure that the ADS was so deep that after the uplifting by the anti-D3 brain, your barrier is high enough that it survives when you also switch on the axion on the NS5 brain. The other thing is that the NS5 brain, think of the action. I mean, if this thing wraps a finite size 2-cycle, then the... also sees the volume of the 2-cycle. If that is finite, it means that the NS5 brain also provides a lifting effect, even if the axion is at zero. It acts similarly, because the 2-cycle is small, but down the throat, it acts similarly like an anti-D3 brain when the axion has switched off. If you dial parameters in the right way, you can probably can arrange for that. This is already can also provide the necessary zero-point uplifting. But still, you need that this uplift is, I mean, comparable. I mean, to the size that you add in potential energy during inflation. Otherwise, you cannot control yourself.
I think the main problem is that, you know, in some sense, in order to believe that this is a theory of the real world, you have to make a lot of other fake statements about many other aspects of string model building at the moment of being part of the theory of the real world, and that's, of course, that can be questioned in many levels, but you know.
I know.
I think we should probably just continue. I mean, you know.
And welcome to the life of the Infocons.
Right.
yeah.
Right. So you know.
What I just want to make the point here is that this thing, in a sense, acts like a module. If I give you any type to B model where the moduli have been stabilized, and imagine I cook up there a model that has enough complex structure moduli, enough free cycles to fine tune the cosmological constant, that has a local sector inside where you put like these on a local shrinkable four cycle, these kind of like WAFA like F theory guts models or something like that. If you have that, and then this thing has a symmetry that allows me basically, it has a warped throat or two of them, and it allows me to orbifold these throats. Some of them have. I get these fixed lines, I can blow them up, this is a local process. And then I can just put these fibrines there. Yeah? They are just a module that you can add. And because these fibrines, the whole system has this shift symmetry because of the whole setup, the fibrines will generate you this linear potential. Your only task is to stabilize all the two cycles and four cycles at finite volumes so that all the instanton effects are done. So this is what I mean, in a sense it's what I say is technically natural because you don't have to do a fine tuning here to get this thing to work. You only have to have enough warping to suppress the NS fibrine energy density to the scale where you want it. I don't have low energy supersymmetry because the breaking is basically at the inflaton scale, inflation scale. That is true. I have, of course, couplings to FF tilde living on that two on the fourth cycle associated with the two cycle. Yeah, of course. I mean, if I could manage somehow, I don't know, if it would be possible to, you know, the two cycle which the fibrin racks has an associated fourth cycle in the Calabi-Yau topology, if that fourth cycle I could choose by blowing up additional points in it, or whatever, build these F-theory guts there, then you would directly couple to the FF tildes of the standard model. That would be much more efficient.
You know, every top-down inflationary model always has problems sometimes meeting reality at the end of the line. So maybe you should just continue and, you know.
I am ready.
Oh.
That was my last slide.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there's not more. I mean,
I think what you've convinced us is possible to perhaps imagine ways of doing it, although it seems to require a fair bit of imagination.
It requires basically, we have this whole machinery to basically build up things on layer on layer. The only thing is with this fibrin model is that they are in a sense technically natural because they are really the shift symmetry that they enjoy is quite powerful, and the local supersymmetry which you can typically enforce that protects you from nasty corrections. So that together, I don't have to have any, you know. I gave you this kind of toy manifold. The numbers I choose, I don't have to change to make inflation to work in the end. So there's no extra tuning involved. And that I think is nice. It means that when you talk about landscape statistics, it might maybe that these models are, in a sense, quite prevalent.
So,
thank you very much.
You've grilled Alex a lot, so maybe we can just take a break.